This is the closing of, or the continuation and closing of the message of this morning, entitled The Opportunity of Adversity. The Opportunity of Adversity. I'm going to take about 5 or 6 minutes to review this morning and then take up for the message tonight. I said this morning that there was a man named Job who lost everything that we normally think of as being precious. He lost his wealth, all of it. He was, by the way, probably the wealthiest man in his whole city. I mean, he was wealthy. He lost all of that. He had a wonderful, wonderful family. 10 children. All of them were killed at the same time. If you ever would humanize Bible characters, you'd cry almost when you think about that. And then that's all gone. He lost his health and got a form of leprosy called elephantiasis, which was a form of leprosy that had boils all over his body and running corruption coming from those boils. He lost his health. He went out to the garbage dump of the city, and there he sat in the embers of the burning garbage in an effort for the pain of the burning garbage or the burned garbage and ashes could alleviate somewhat the worst pain of his disease. It was so bad he got what the Bible calls a potsherd, which is simply a piece of metal, and he would scrape those sores like that because that alleviated a little bit of the pain. The pain from that scraping was less excruciating than the pain from the disease. All of those things were bad. His wealth, his children, his health, all those were bad. His probably most excruciating pain was the shame of it all. If we had time, we could show you that this man used to walk down the street, and boys and girls would say, "That's the kind of person I want to be when I grow up." Moms and dads would point to Job and say, "That's what I want you to be, son, when you become a man." Most respected man of the whole city, no doubt about that, or maybe the whole country. Now Job becomes a reproach. Folks laugh at him. They walk out there and see this man, his health is gone, his children gone, his wealth is gone, everything is gone. They see him in the ash heap, in the garbage dump, scraping his sores, and they laugh at him. They mock him and make fun of him. He who was the most respected now is the least respected. He who was the most popular now is the least popular. He who was the wisest man of all now is the object of reproach and scorn and ridicule. And there he sits. His wife comes. What an opportunity she has. What a wonderful opportunity she has. An opportunity to stand beside Job. An opportunity to stick with him. But she says, "Why don't you curse God and die?" What she is saying is, there's no need to serve God. Look what he's done to you. I said this morning, by the way, then his friends came, unquote, so-called friends. And they came, Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, they came. And they, instead of encouraging, what an opportunity they had. But they did not seize upon that opportunity to be a real friend in time of trouble and heartache and suffering and pain. And they tried to tell Job, preach to Job, and tell him what God was doing and why he was out there. What an opportunity they had. Don't you see what I'm saying? Your suffering brings with it an opportunity. An opportunity to prove what you are. An opportunity to stand for what you believe. An opportunity to be loyal to your God and love your God and show that love for your God. That isn't all. When your loved one is in pain or suffering or facing adversity, there's an opportunity for you to stand beside that loved one. That isn't all. When your friend is facing adversity, there's an opportunity for you to stand beside your friend. What an opportunity Job had. You see, with every reversal in life, there comes an opportunity. A reversal is simply an opportunity turned inside out. Job has an opportunity to show his love for God like nobody in the world had. Job had an opportunity to show his trust and faith in God like nobody in the world had. No woman ever had a better opportunity to show her faith in God than Job's wife had. No woman ever had a better opportunity to show her love for her husband than Job's wife did. And no friends ever had a greater opportunity to show their friendship, their real friendship, than Job's friends did. I want to say this. You wives of college students here, you've got an opportunity that no other wife in this room has like you have. You've got an opportunity to stand beside your guy. You've got an opportunity to express your love to him that very few ladies have. You can say to him, I love you enough to do without. I love you enough to do without you much of the time. I love you enough. I'd rather have a little bit of you than a whole lot of anybody else in the whole world. And you have an opportunity. Now seize upon it. Good night. Don't foil this opportunity. Seize upon it. With these lonely days, there comes great opportunity to say to your guy, I love you. You know, when your child, I'm not talking about a little child now, I'm talking about an adult child. When your adult child makes a mistake, there's an opportunity for you parents. An opportunity for you to stand beside your child no matter what happens. An opportunity to stand beside your child and you say, you're my daughter or you're my son. It doesn't matter what you've done. You belong to me and I love you. And there's an opportunity to be loyal and faithful that you folks have. Instead of lamenting the fact that you have adversity, why don't you rejoice that adversity has brought you the opportunity that nothing else will bring you. What an opportunity his friends had. What an opportunity you have. When you have heartache, you have an opportunity to prove your love for God like at no other time in your life. Good night. Anybody can serve God when everything's going well. You're no red-hot Christian because you serve God when the sun is always shining and there are no midnights and everything's noontime and there's no illness and no heartache and no sorrow and no adversity. You're no great shakes of a Christian. But you give me that child of God who faces adversity without a whine, without a complaint, who says, this gives me a chance to show God I'll love him at midnight as well as at noontime. What an opportunity you have when adversity comes. I want to say this. What an opportunity you have when you fail. I said this morning in the end of the sermon in my second and third message during the invitation, my little addendums that I put on the end. I said something like this. It doesn't matter how you got where you are. If you are where you are and you're down, you have an opportunity to get up. It may be somebody pushed you down. Well, okay, don't spend your time being bitter at them because you're down. Take that same energy and use it to get back up. You've got an opportunity to prove what you're made of. Now, it just may be that you got yourself down. It may be that your fall is self-inflicted. Okay, if you had not yet fallen, I'd warn you not to fall. But if you're down, I don't care what got you down, you got an opportunity to get back up again. And you have an opportunity to get back up like nobody else has because you're down. When all is crumbled, it doesn't matter what caused it to crumble. It's your fault it crumbled. Somebody else's fault it crumbled. If providentially you crumble, doesn't matter. The fact is you're where you are. And where you are, if you're down, you have an opportunity to get up and prove to the whole world that you've got it. I considered, somebody asked me on the trip the other day, asked me a few questions. They said, Dr. Hiles, why don't you, you never seem to be bitter because you didn't have what other folks had. You don't seem to get bitter when people attack you, and you seem to keep on being on top side. And Brother House, what is it? I know what it is. To me, every adversity is an opportunity. I do not like adversity. I'd rather not have it. I'd rather be well than sick. I'd rather be loved than hated. But blessed, and I'd rather have victory than defeat. But let me tell you something, Buster. Let me tell you something. You mark this down. Brother, what you are is determined by what you do when you're down. You let me know what you do when you're down. Not when everything's going okay. I'm not an admirer of this fellow, but John Conley used to be governor of Texas. I was in a motel room one time. I was watching the news channel, CNN News. And John Conley went bankrupt. Maybe you've been maybe you read about it. He went bankrupt, lost everything. And the guy was a multimillionaire, lost everything. Had to auction off everything that he had. I'm talking about. He became like you and I are. He just didn't have anything, and he was a multimillionaire. Had to auction off it all, things that were precious and things he'd had, and auction them off. And by the way, he didn't get a dime what came in either. It went for his bankruptcy case. And I heard John Conley interview. And they said, "Mr. Conley, what do you plan to do?" He said, "I plan to get back up. I plan to get back up." Well, what in what way? He said, "Don't know. Just plan to get back up." Well, but what do you, in what field? "I don't know. I just plan to get back up." John Conley has an opportunity right now that few men in America have. John Conley has an opportunity to show that his first success was no fluke. He has an opportunity to become wealthy without inheriting anything. He has an opportunity to succeed without anybody giving it to him on a silver platter. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I do not want anybody I love to suffer, but I want to tell you again, as I said this morning, that when you do suffer, and adversity comes, and trial comes, and heartache comes, it gives you an opportunity that you would never have had without that trial, that heartache, and that adversity. When my daddy died, it gave me an opportunity to use my daddy's death. I wonder how many folks are in heaven tonight because my daddy died without Christ. When I had to leave, was given my choice to bow my knee to the Southern Baptist Baal and support institutions I wouldn't give a red nickel to, a red penny to, not a dime to. Listen, there's no way I'd give it out. I don't care if it buys me popularity or buys me fame. I don't care. There's no way I'll give one penny of my money to an institution that doesn't believe that book. There's no way I'm going to do that. By the way, all of a sudden, the whole rug was pulled out from under me. Please don't misunderstand me. But do you know that at the tender age of 26, 27, 28 years of age, of the 3,500 Southern Baptist churches in the state of Texas, our church was chosen the church of the year. And of the 3,500 churches in the you don't seem very impressed about that. Ooh. And of the 3,500 churches in Texas Baptist Convention, I was chosen the pastor of the year. I feel an insincerity in all of this. But that isn't all. Listen, the next year, our church was chosen the church of the year again. And I was chosen for the second consecutive year, the pastor of the year again. I was led of God to build the fastest growing church in the world. Oh, I've worked so hard and I get so little appreciation. At the age of 27, 28 years, still in my 20s, age of many of you students, I spoke at the State Training Union Convention in Tyler before 4,000 people. That same year, I spoke before 5,000 people at the State Sunday School Convention. That same year, I spoke before 7,000 people at the state convention in the Coliseum in San Antonio. That same year, I was asked to speak at the Southern Baptist Convention in the big Coliseum in Kansas City, the national convention of the Southern Baptist Convention, still in my 20s. I think I deserve a raise. You can't buy bread and bacon with ooze. This ain't no cheap guy you got up here talking to you tonight. I was a big shot. But they came. I can still see that the big guy that was head of the convention, I was about to speak in San Antonio. He said, "Now, Brother Jack, don't be so hard this time.
He said, you're a young man, and I'm an older man. Let me advise you. He said, settle down a little bit. Don't ruin this convention. Again.
And then, all of a sudden, they said, you support things that... By the way, they said to me, you can't belong to this group and have John R. Rice preach in your pulpit. Well, I'd rather have John R. Rice's friendship than the whole convention's friendship. They said, you can't belong to this outfit and have Lester Roloff preach in your church and you preach for Lester Roloff. Well, I'd rather have Lester Roloff friendship than all American Baptists, Northern Baptists, Western Baptists, Southern Baptists, Southeastern Baptists, Southwestern Baptists, Northeastern Baptists, Northwestern Baptists, all put together. They said, you can't be associated with Lee Robertson. See, the three R's that got me in trouble weren't reading and writing arithmetic. It was Robertson, Rice, and Roloff that got me in trouble. They told me, they said, these three men are questionable characters. I got to know them very well. They were absolutely right. But all of a sudden, Joe Boyd called me one morning and said, Brother Jack, do you understand what they're doing to us? I said, what? He said, we've got to conform to support what we don't believe is right to support, or we're going to be voted out today. Are you listening to me? I went to a meeting. I had preached revivals in 40 of those churches. I got 7 votes. Where are those 40 preachers? Scared of the big shots. And all of a sudden, my home college was ashamed of me. My home church was ashamed of me. I did not know in those days anything about independent Baptists. Didn't know a thing. My whole ministry was pulled out from under me. I said, Brother Jack, what'd you do? Had an opportunity. Opportunity. Opportunity to what? Opportunity to rebuild. I'd never spoken at any kind of an independent Baptist meeting. I was scheduled to speak for Lester Roloff. I'd had Dr. Rice schedule, had him, and had Robertson coming, and I was going to preach for Roloff. My whole sphere of, quote, what I thought was friendship was ended. Well, Brother House, what'd you do? Whine? Yeah. I whined for a while. But I had an opportunity. I had an opportunity to show if Jack Howes had it or not. I had an opportunity to show if I rode the waves of a Baptist convention to prominence or if I'd worked prominence. I had an opportunity. One of the best friends I had came to me the night it happened and he said, he came to our house. He paced the floor. He was an evangelist, well known in Texas Baptist. He paced the floor. He said, Jack, you get this word to the whole convention. You get this out. You get this out. That's wrong. You ought to take a preach a sermon and send the sermon to every pastor in the Southern Baptist Convention. I thought he meant it. So I did. He came back 2 weeks later and said, you ruined me, man. I can't associate with you anymore. They're canceling my meetings out. Let me tell you something, brother. I'd rather be a friend to my friends and never have a meeting with anybody and preach on a street corner somewhere or stand up in the jailhouse or the rescue mission or a rest home and be a friend to my friend. By the way, years passed. That man walked out of our house that night. Never saw him for years. Totally forsook me. I was preaching in Baytown, Texas, years later. Had a great service one night. Altar was full of people. And I was on my knees at the altar praying, and other folks were too. And I felt somebody tap me on the shoulder and say, Jack, hey, Brother Jack, Brother Jack. I said, what is it? Looked up. It was that evangelist. He said, Brother Jack, I've lived in hell ever since I walked out of your house that night. He said, I didn't know you were going to rise up. I thought you were gone. He said, what'd you do? Kick him in the teeth? No, kicked him in the pants. What'd you do? Forgave him.
How'd you feel when he came back? And now you have a big church and you have influence in America with fundamental Baptists, independent Baptist people. What did you do to the traitor? It was an opportunity for me to forgive him. That's what it was.
Job had some opportunities I want to share with you. What in the world opportunity? See, we're always saying, some preachers come to me in a little house, I don't need to have a big church. I just want a church with a big opportunity. Well, listen, Buster. No church is an opportunity. Make one. Build one. Start one. I started 16 churches. Start one. Can't start a church? Start a fight. Start something. See, the kind of opportunity you want, the kind of opportunity I'm talking about, two different things. Here's Job in the ash heap. Here's Job flat busted. Here's Job a reproach. Smartest man in town, richest man in town, best man in town, best Christian in town, most influential man in town, the biggest hero in the town. And there he is in the ash heap as the young folks come by and laugh at him and make fun of him. And I say Job had some opportunities, and I say along with his affliction and adversity and heartache, I say he had some opportunities. Let me share him with you. Number one, Job had the opportunity to show his real love for God. Job had the best opportunity in the world. Look up to God, to not just to say, God, I love you, but God, look at me and I'll prove my love. Though you slay me, yet will I trust you. I know that my Redeemer liveth. He shall stand again at the last day. I'm standing for you. If you bless me, or you curse me, or I live, or I die, or I'm well, or I'm sick, I love you, and you're my God, and nothing's going to change that. And I'll die if I have to, but I know you live. And though you slay me, yet will I trust you. What an opportunity Job had. What an opportunity you have with your adversity. What's your problem tonight? What's your heartache? What's your burden? What's your sorrow? What is your load tonight that you're carrying? You've got an opportunity that comes with that. And the bigger the burden, the bigger the opportunity is.
I recall when the war was over, I never saw any battle. They outlawed me from battle. Just like they outlawed germ warfare. We were both too dangerous. So, I was in the army during the war, but I was held back from going overseas to be training cadre. You veteran, you ex-servicemen know what I'm talking about. Even maybe some of you sailors may know. Other than the servicemen. But I was held back to be cadre to train others. When the war was over, they came back from overseas and they gathered around the barracks, these fellows, and they showed their scars. And I almost wish I'd had some scars. They told about this, I got this in Normandy, in the jump in Normandy. And fellows said, I got this in Iwo Jima. I got this in Okinawa. Said, I got this washing dishes on KP. Ooh, yeah. I wrote mother a letter and she told her I was on the kitchen police and she thought it was a promotion. She bragged all over the church about it. My son got promoted to kitchen police. She didn't know one time I was mashing potatoes and lost my fatigue cap. But I found it when I served the potatoes.
But I found myself wishing I'd been wounded. Hey, the guys in battle are the guys wearing the medals. I had no opportunity to win a Purple Heart. I had no opportunity to win a Congressional Medal of Honor. I had no opportunity to win a Silver Star? Bronze Star? Whatever it is, I had no opportunity to win it. Why? I wasn't in battle. And those men that were in the trenches and in the battles, they had opportunities I didn't have. Tonight, if you're having some tough times, or if someone very dear to you is having some tough times, congratulations, an opportunity. You have opportunities that other folks don't have.
Job had an opportunity to show his love for God, something else. Job had an opportunity in the ash heap. I'm saying in the ash heap he had opportunity. With his wife saying, curse God and die. And his children's bodies still warm in the grave. And his wealth gone, his bank account gone, and his prestige gone, his popularity gone, and his influence gone. Job had an opportunity not only to show God his love, but he had an opportunity to show his trust in God. Bigger opportunity than anybody else. God, you let 10 of my children die, but I trust you. God, I've lost every bit of my net worth, but I trust you. God, my wife has told me to curse you and die, but I trust you. Now, I'm not trying to get you to go out and look for troubles and look for burdens and look for heartaches. But you listen to me. This world is a veil of tears. I left my office last night and I went out and I just wanted to cry and cry and cry and cry. Why? Because people I love have heartaches. And some have gotten themselves in trouble. And some have loved ones that have gotten trouble. Well, bless God, that trouble you're in, I don't care how you got down, bless God, you got a chance to get up. Show what you're made out of. It's an opportunity. Show God you trust Him. Well, I just don't understand why God let this happen. Well, bless God, aren't you glad you've got a God that's got more sense than you've got? Trust Him. I don't understand it. Trust Him. I can't figure it out. Trust Him. Job's opportunities. Had an opportunity to trust his God and had an opportunity to show his love for his God. But along with this, Job had an opportunity also that nobody else could have had without his problem. And that is, Job had an opportunity to love his enemies. They're called his friends, but they weren't. But he had an opportunity. Eliphaz comes along and says, Job, your trouble is you haven't had a deep enough experience with God. Your hair hasn't stood on end. Brother, thank God that's not what's qualified. Because I couldn't be very spiritual. But I'm saying, your hair hasn't stood on end, said Eliphaz. Eliphaz, you haven't gotten a message from God lately. You haven't gotten a not revelation. Word of knowledge. Job, I haven't seen you say, who? I hear a word of knowledge. I see a gallbladder fluttering. Yeah. I see an ulcer bleeding. Yeah. I see a hair falling out in a fellow in California. That is the biggest bunch of tomfoolery garbage I ever saw in my life. Revelation from God. We've got our revelation from God right there. Eliphaz came. Then Bildad walked up and said, Job, I'd like to tell you something. There's some things. Bildad was the fellow who believed in tradition. He said, Job, you haven't lighted enough candles lately. How long has it been since you've been to the confessional booth? He said, Job, the tradition of the church you have left. And then Zophar came and said, Job, you're shallow. Let's just face it, you're shallow. Job thought they were his friends. They were his enemies. Job had a chance, an opportunity to love them. You can't bless those that curse you if nobody's cursing you. You can't love those that hate you if nobody's hating you. You can't pray for those that despitefully use you if nobody's despitefully using you. No, I don't like to have friends. No, I don't like to have people that are trying to wreck me. No, I don't enjoy it. But bless God, every time somebody tries to wreck me, I've got a chance to say, I love you, my enemy. I love you. I pray for you. I want to help you. You give me a chance and I'll be your friend. That's what the Bible says. I had no enemies. I couldn't love my enemies. Job had an opportunity to show his love for God. He wouldn't have had outside the ash heap. He had an opportunity to show his trust in God. He wouldn't have had with live children, all of his wealth. But Job had another opportunity. He had an opportunity to prove himself. I love this one. Thursday night, I flew to Middletown, Ohio. I hesitate to call this name, but I'm going to do it. I admire the fellow. Name is Ron Schaefer. Little short fellow. Packs a wallet. I knew him in Florida. He became pastor of a church in Florida with a handful of people. Well, not a handful, but 300 or 400. He built a church there running 2,500 Sunday school on a big day, 3,500 and 4,000. Boy, he was a live wire, but ordered more than he could pay for. There's one thing about First Baptist Church in Hammond. We don't have any money, and we keep what money we get moving. Money in the bank never wins a soul. Money in the bank never sends a missionary. Money in the bank never makes you cry and beg God to supply your needs either. But anyway, he got about such hard to say. I doubt if there's been one single debt paid one day late in 29 years here in this church. But wait a minute. Because of his sincerity and his zeal, Ron Schaefer got in financial trouble. And brother, I never saw a man carry a load any heavier in my life. He got the place to where he was almost about to lose his mind. But he didn't run. Anybody can run. He could have run and left that thing to the people, let them call somebody else to have to pay off his debt. He didn't do that. He stayed. He lived in hell and built himself back up. Tonight he's pastor of a great church in Middletown, Ohio. I admire Dr. Bob Gray in Jacksonville, Florida. Dr. Gray did the same thing. He built a school back, and he got there first because, and didn't have any Christian schools in those days. I'm not talking about colleges now. I'm talking about a high school, junior high, and grade school. He built the first one of the big first day schools in that part of the country. So everybody wanted to go to a Christian school came to his school, just like they did to ours. In fact, we started our school. There were no Christian schools anywhere around here. They came to us from Chesterton. They came to us from Lowell. They came to us from Illinois. They came to us from Hobart. They came to us from all over this area. Now you have Christian schools all over the area. Naturally, those people have their own schools, and they don't come to our school. But now, Dr. Bob Gray built his budget on his school, and all of a sudden, other schools started, and his school went down, and Dr. Bob Gray had to declare chapter. Is chapter 11 personal, or is that the one's corporation? 11's personal. Okay, it was chapter 13. 11's what you declared. Chapter 13. Church was in receivership. I sat down with Dr. Gray one time. He cried like a baby. But that was an opportunity for Bob Gray to show what the real Bob Gray is. Brother, he just stayed there and dug his way out. And now, everything's fine again. Opportunity. Well, everything's just falling apart. I think I'll run. No, everything's falling apart. I think I'll stay. Everything's falling apart. I think I'll put it back together. But Brother Hiles, I've been knocked all the way to the bottom. Good. Then you can't go any farther, lower. The bottom is as low as you can go. You can't fall from the floor. You can't fall up. I mean, brother, if you're at the bottom, shout, say, bless God, I'm as far down as I can go. Won't get any worse. But brother, when you're down, look at all the space you've got up there to climb to. You're at the top, you can't climb. You can't take an elevator from the top of the Hancock Building up. I'm simply saying, if you're on the top side, good. But if you're on the bottom side, Job, in the ash heap. Health gone, wealth gone, children gone, wife gone, respect gone, popularity gone, honor gone, prestige gone. But there's something that wasn't there that's there now. An opportunity, Job, to show what you're made out of. Now, by the way, Bible said God gave Job twice as many camels, right? Twice as many sheep, right? Twice as many donkeys, right? You think God dropped those out of heaven? Job started off with probably a donkey and a sheep and a camel. No, he had to start with two of these. You didn't know I knew all that. A word of knowledge just came. Yeah. Job didn't say to God, God, if you don't give me 6,000 sheep, our friends, if you don't give me 6,000 sheep, God's going to kill me this year. No, sir. He had to buy the feed. He had to build the fences. He had to build the barns. He had to get the land. He had to work to get the land. And God didn't drop him out of heaven. God looked down and said, that guy's got what it takes. He'll get back up. And God blessed his efforts and blessed his work. And Job built his way back up again. What an opportunity you got, Job. Nobody's got an opportunity in the whole world like you have right now to show your love for God. Nobody has an opportunity like you have to show your trust in God. Nobody has an opportunity like you have, Job, to love his friends or enemies. Nobody has an opportunity like you have, Job, to show what he's made out of, to prove himself. Said a young man of the day who's on the bottom, who was on the top. I said, what an opportunity you have. What an opportunity you have. He said, you think I ought to change professions? I said, not on your life. Just stay right where you are and build your way back to the top. I said to his wife, what an opportunity you have. You've got an opportunity to show your husband you love him in a way you would never have had if he hadn't have fallen.
And I've just lost confidence in my husband.
Never had any.
Well, he disappointed me. But you know what? Mrs. Job, God bless you. You've got an opportunity.
But you see, she didn't think Job would get back on top again. It's the way the wind blows. I'm going to find out who's going to win. In the first place, you may be wrong about who's going to win. In the second place, you're supposed to be loyal as a friend even if your friend loses. Go to the ash heap with him. My friend's in the ash heap. Reserve me a seat beside him. My friend's in the ash heap. Get me a potsherd too. Job had an opportunity. Had another opportunity. Had an opportunity to find out his real friends. All through my ministry, from time to time, people have gone to my friends and tried to shake my friends and tried to cause my friends to forsake me. But not a one has ever failed. All they've done is reveal to me who my friends were. That's not a bad deal. Most folks never learn that. But Job learned. Nobody came to Job and said, Job, you're a wonderful man. I love you. Oh, what a fine man you are, Job. Could you let me borrow some money? No. All they could say, could I borrow your potsherd? Could I borrow the coals which you're sitting? Job had not one single thing to offer his friends. And brother, when you're on the bottom and don't have anything to offer your friends, that's a tremendous opportunity to find out who your friends are. You've never lost a friend. You've never lost a friend. You've never lost a friend. You've never quit being a friend. You never have. Boy, I tell you, I've had many a friend. I'm just calling a bunch of names tonight. When Dr. Curtis Hudson took the sword of the Lord, you know how much I love John Rice. But brother, when John Rice was gone, John Rice was gone. And God raised up Dr. Curtis Hudson to be editor of the Sword of the Lord. And I'm his friend. Mark it down, I'm his friend. He had some trouble. Called me on the telephone. He said, Brother Hiles, he said, I don't believe I can stay if you're against me. He said, are you for me? I said, you know better than that. Of course I'm for you. He said, you don't know the issue. I said, you don't understand it. I don't have to know the issue. I'm your friend. I got fellows on the board, talked to everybody on the board, took them down to the store of the Lord, spent 3 hours down there standing up with my friend. Did you check the issues? No, I didn't check the issues. I'm his friend. Check them later. I like the kind of friendship, sees a friend in the fight, knocks the other fellow cold and says, why did I hit him? Job found out who his friends were. You know, it makes me almost want to go to the ash heap. Old Job had all the luck. What a deal he had. Got the chance to show his love for God like nobody in the world did. Got his chance to show his trust in God like nobody in the world did. Had a chance to prove himself like nobody in the world did. Look, if you've been expelled from college, get back up and get back in there and prove you've got what it takes. Another chance, opportunity, had an opportunity to be a friend. Had an opportunity to see, Job's a friend to Eliphaz. Eliphaz has proved he wasn't a friend to Job, but that doesn't, Job's still a friend to Eliphaz. Did you ever read that scripture when Job prayed for his friends, the Lord turned him, turned his captivity? What was the turning point in Job's life? What was the thing that caused the trend to turn and started his upward swing when he prayed for his friends? What says? These guys that forsook him. He became his enemies. These fair weather fellows who was with him when he had a lot of money. He had an opportunity to be a friend. I'm a friend to some, a lot of people whose friendship I doubt. When I give you my friendship, I give you my friendship like I were taking vows at the altar. When I give you my friendship, I give you my friendship like I gave Jesus my life. I'm your friend. If you betray me, I'm your friend. If I doubt your friendship, I'm your friend. You don't have to be my friend, me to be your friend. Job got a chance to be a friend to his friends. And the last opportunity he had that I called your attention tonight, he got an opportunity to endure hardness as a good soldier. More than anybody in the whole world. Now listen to me, folks. Before you get out of, before the ink on your high school diploma is dried, you're going to find that life is real. A little girl grew up in our church. One of my favorites through the years. Loved her and still do. She's here tonight. Got married. First little baby had an awful disease, crippled, never been normal. All of a sudden, just past teenage years, thrust into the realities of the burdens of life. Won't be long. A couple this morning. I married them just a few months ago. Sweet little couple. It's the one that got the license for Illinois. We didn't know it right before the wedding. I talked to the pastor here and asked her what to do. This coach tonight decided to go ahead and have the wedding. Nobody knew it. We couldn't marry him in Indiana because the license was in Illinois. They didn't know they had to get the license in the same state where they got married. Walked up here on the platform, full well knowing I couldn't marry him. Audience here for a wedding. Big crowd. Had the music, had everything. Vows, changing of rings. Came time to pronounce them husband and wife. I said, folks, I'm sorry, but I can't pronounce them husband and wife. Probably an old boyfriend's here with a gun.
I said, they don't have a license to get married in Indiana. They got to get married in Illinois. So we're all going to get in our cars and drive 5 blocks down here. I pronounced them husband and wife. We got in the cars, all went in a processional, drove down to a park just over here off Wentworth Street, got under the trees there, sang Amazing Grace while folks come. Can you imagine walking down the street and seeing folks have church in a wedding gown and a tuxedo, testifying, praising God? And I pronounced them husband and wife, came back here to the reception. That's good. That's fun. Exciting. Except this morning I placed the oil on the brow of the little baby they just had, born with leukemia. It didn't take long to find out that life is real. I was driving in the car the other day with Linda and Cindy, our two oldest, Linda and Becky, our two oldest girls who live in Texas. We were talking a little while, and we stopped to get a bite to eat, and we were sitting across the table, and two of their children were there. There was little Melissa, one of the sweetest girls you ever met in your life. Melissa's 9, I think, now. One of the sweetest girls you'll ever see. Writes beautiful poetry. Little foot turned in like that. Walks with a limp. Little right leg's about half the size as the left leg. And, of course, we know what that means when you become the teenager. She runs, foot turns in, she falls over the right side of her foot, stumbles. Linda, Becky, one of them said to me, said, Dad, said, when the children are little, said, I almost sometimes be glad when they get married. I said, that won't change anything. You'll cry as many tears after they're married as you cry now. Doesn't matter. Life's a veil of tears for all of us. The difference in us is whether we seize upon the opportunity that tears bring. The opportunity of adversity. Job, sweetheart, why don't you just curse God and die? Do you understand what she was saying? She didn't say she didn't want him as her husband anymore. She said, die. Die means dead. It means you ain't here no more. It means you're gone. It means that she would have put up with him. Did you ever try to kiss anybody with leprosy? Job said, give me a kiss. He had good ones, too. Give me a big old hug, honey. She gets stuck to him. I want a husband that can support me. I want a... Her father had said something, too. It's in the Hebrew. Why don't you just come home to us? I told you that preacher couldn't support you. We drove by two places. I'm going to close again with this. We drove by two places Wednesday. I didn't say anything about one of them. I said something about the other, but I thought about one. And if we'd had time to stop, we had two buses, so I couldn't tell everybody we were driving what was passing. We passed by a place called Laurel Land Memorial Park. Now, what is Laurel Land Memorial Park? It is probably one of the two or three most beautiful cemeteries in all Dallas. Mausoleum, everything. When I was a kid, it was built out there. A fellow named Widener built it. Made millions and millions of dollars. He had a daughter named Kathy. You know where's Kathy Rice. Wait a minute. We passed by another place. We went over the Trinity River. On either side of the river, I'd say maybe a mile or a half mile either side of the river, there are big levees to keep it from flooding and going into downtown Dallas into the Oak Cliff section, levees. There are all kinds of bridges across that Trinity River, probably a dozen bridges at various places that lead from northeastern Dallas to southwest Dallas. As you come
across the bridge and come across the levee. The levee comes up here and meets the bridge like that. People lived, when I was a boy, they lived. They'd put some box wood and have the underside of the bridge for a ceiling, the ground, the levee ground for a floor. And they'd build some boxes, and they lived in those underneath those bridges. One young fellow lived under those bridges named Bill Rice. Bill Rice met Kathy Widener, who lived in luxury, and he lived under a bridge. Tall, gangly fellow, didn't have a suit to fit him. He found a suit to fit him. He couldn't have fit the suit. He lived under that bridge. Kathy fell in love with him. We passed by both places. Passed by the Laurel Land Memorial Cemetery that Mr. Widener built and that Kathy could have inherited. We passed by that bridge where Dr. Bill lived. She went home and told her dad, "Dad, I'm in love with a Baptist preacher. Where does he live?" "He's a bridge builder. Builds houses. Bridge houses." Mr. Widener was shocked. Kathy married the fellow. Starved to death with him. Left her chance to be heiress. Billions. They got themselves a little mobile trailer. Took it around in revivals. Dr. Bill preaching in revivals. She talked to the children. One day they found one of the little children was deaf. She educated that deaf child herself, living in a little bitty hovel. They started a place for the deaf. They bought some acreage down in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, close to it. Had no place to live. They built a little two-room place for four children and Dr. Bill and Kathy. No windows, just raised up the wood and let the wind come in. No windows, no stove. Cooked on a hot plate for 2 years out in the woods. No bedroom suit. Two rooms. Six people. Two rooms. No washer. No dishwasher. No dryer. No furniture except a few little what they could pick up here and there. Rich lady. You say, "Well, bless her heart. All that sacrifice. What are you talking about? What are you talking about?" That woman in that little two-room shack with four kids and a husband had one of the biggest opportunities in the whole world to say, "Bill, I love you. And you're my guy." And she seized upon it and stuck with him. And by the way, he became one of the most famous preachers in the world, the most respected men alive. I expect when Dr. Bill took that nap one day and had a stroke and was paralyzed partially, couldn't hardly speak. I expect when he took a nap that day and sat up on the side of the bed and looked up and said to Kathy, "It's finished, Kathy." She said, "What's finished?" He said, "It's finished." "What's finished?" "Finished." Laid down on the bed and went to heaven. I've got an idea that Dr. Kathy Rice was glad she seized upon her opportunity. Put your whining. Cancel your pity party. Don't feel sorry for yourself. What an opportunity you have. Prosperity doesn't bring opportunity. Adversity brings opportunity. Laughter doesn't bring opportunity. Tears brings opportunity. Bring opportunity. Seize upon it. Whatever you got tonight in your life. Bitter. Troubles, problems, heartache, sorrows. I could close my eyes and point anywhere in this room, and I wouldn't point over three people away from somebody that I know personally has a heart that is crushed. This week is a very serious time for somebody very dear to me in my life.
one of the most serious times of that person's life. Other friends of mine, more of my friends are in serious adversity right now, as I said this morning, than have been in my lifetime. I say to them who can hear me now, and to those who will hear me by tape, grab a hold of that adversity. Look on the backside of it. You'll see the word opportunity written on the backside of it. Seize upon it. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Which are you? Huh? Which are you?